Good evening. Welcome to Speak Up Arkansas. This is Paul Kelly. I'm the host on today's program, and I will be talking about labor in the South, labor unions, something that certainly has had a history of not being able to develop very much. And we've got this is our Arkansas Education Association monthly show, and we've got two folks in the studio who are with the organization and know a lot about labor, particularly when it comes to teachers unions and that sort of thing. But this is going to be a broader discussion, and I want to welcome you all to call in. You can call here always at 501-433-0088, or you can send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com. We'll take your comments and questions on the air, and hope you enjoy the show. Our guests today are the president of the Arkansas Education Association, Kathy Kohler.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us, Paul.
All right, and we also have Tracy Ann Nelson, who is the executive director of the AEA. Hello, Tracy.
Hey, Paul.
All right, you guys have been here before.
Yes.
You know the drill, and I think labor is a really important issue, but let's start off by first explaining the mission of the Arkansas Education Association, what your organization does, and why it's important to educators or workers in the state.
So we are a 150-year-old organization that has supported public schools in the state of Arkansas for the time period that we've been around, and we'll continue to do that. Our members are made up of educators in school buildings across the state of Arkansas who are with our students every single day. Our goal is to, number one, make sure that the learning environment for children is successful and that the working environment for educators is one that cultivates success for students. And we do that in a number of ways. We navigate the legislature to help ensure the rights and, you know, regulations meet those needs of students and educators. We work with the Department of Education to help ensure that professional development and all of the rules and regulations that are used to manage public schools are ones that ensure student success and support educator success also. So it's been an ongoing mission. It's not one that we think will change, because we know the need for public schools in Arkansas continues to grow as our state faces economic challenges. And we know that education is one of the ways that people can emerge from poverty and can emerge from, a lifestyle to one that they will be successful and matriculate to citizenhood. And we know that's one of the reasons people like migrating to Arkansas, is because they seek out the education so that their children and the family can improve upon their lifestyle.
Right, and a good education is certainly a big magnet for folks to consider when they are coming mm-hmm. to the state, so it is important to make sure that that's what's there. Something good will happen. Do you want to add anything, Kathy?
Well, one of the things that we've committed to each year, we have a theme that we dedicate ourselves to, and this year it is every student, every school, every day. And by that, we mean that in Arkansas, the AEA is advocating to ensure that every student has the professional staff working with them and the resources they need to be successful in every school, every day. And that's the work that we are committed to.
Right. Well, that sounds like a down-to-earth and a straightforward approach to it. And it's kind of like being here now, right?
Yeah, and it's also one that parents can embrace and join forces with educators so that their students get what they need.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, why is it important for educators or workers in general to really get organized? I mean, mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. Start off with that.
So I think it comes down to a very simple phrase. A student's learning conditions are a teacher's working conditions. And if we're not putting a premium on the learning environment that our children are in, then conversely, the teachers don't have the resources they need to help the students be successful. They're required, and rightfully so, to differentiate instruction, they have students of all different ability levels, and if they don't have the materials, the technology, the support from the administration they need, students are less likely to be successful. So when we organize around, first and foremost, what is best for students. Mm-hmm. There are those who would like to turn it around, but that's not the case. If we focus on what's best for students, conversely, what's best for adults will become apparent and be a part of that solution. So by focusing on the students, we can engage other people, parents, the community, to be engaged in the work that we're doing, whether we're doing it in BB, I was just in BB last night, or whether it's in Dermont or Newport, wherever it is, each community should have a grasp of what their students need in their classrooms to be successful and how to attain that.
And to add to that, I would say organizing means a collective action that supports whatever the vision is. And our vision is great public schools for every student.
Right. Okay.
One of the things that's been a hot topic lately, and so I'm going to kind of jump in here and say a little bit about it, is teacher absenteeism. I don't see anybody out on, you know, banging a drum about radio host absenteeism, or conversely, like I said recently in a conversation, I would dare say that people that work in nursing homes, Paul, also have a higher than average absenteeism rate. We are exposed to everything possible that comes down the pike. Mm-hmm. And the two groups of people who are carriers, I'm not disparaging them because we love them, are elderly people and children.
Yeah.
And you don't,
that's true.
Yeah. And if you come to school and you're running a fever, you're just infecting other people. CDC, 2 days ago, said that the flu shot, which I did get yesterday, is only going to be 10% successful this year. 10%.
Effective.
Effectiveness. So let's talk about what it would be like to have one child come to school with the flu. Yeah. We have had in the history of the world entire generations knocked out by influenza epidemics. It's not a joking matter. And yet you have people complaining because they don't believe that teachers have the right to be absent and to take care of themselves.
And so that's something, a part of what organizing is about, is mm-hmm. to be able to confront that and explain that and not be ruled by that. Okay. You wanted to add anything? Okay. My question is how actually are teacher unions sort of organized? I know some places have classroom teachers associations. I mean,
it's the same.
Huh?
Yeah, there's no differentiation.
I guess the question is how many of the districts and that sort of thing are actually organized mm-hmm. In a labor fashion?
So in Arkansas, we're part of the National Education Association, which is the single largest union in the country, right, with 3 million members. One in every 100 Americans are a member of our national organization, whether they are a member as an administrator, because depending on what your state bylaws say, you have administrator members, we do. Mm-hmm. We have higher ed members. We have student members in colleges, and we're trying to help them be successful in their preparations. We have retired members who have devoted their lives and still feel like they have more to give back. And then we have what we call in our state, we have active members. Active is made up of two categories: certified classroom, anyone who's on a teacher pay scale, which would include librarians, counselors, speech language pathologists, OTs, PTs. And then we have...
Wait, say what OT is.
Oh, occupational therapist, physical therapist, right. Because all of these individuals are crucial to educating the whole child. We also have the classified employees, which are called education support professionals. So those are the that would include your paraprofessionals, security,
bus
cafeteria,
drivers,
transportation, mm-hmm. secretaries, all of those individuals. Now, depending on how your local was formed, mm-hmm. and I'm going to use an example right here in Central Arkansas, but this is the case in other parts of our state also. Little Rock Education Association is a unified local. That means that everyone, teachers and the education support professionals, belong to the same local. They have representatives from all employee groups on their board. They have a rep council where every building has a certified and a classified member. But North Little Rock and Pulaski County's locals are separate. They have one local for the classroom teachers and one for the classified employees. Part of that historically goes back to when they formed the union. It took decades the education support professionals, the classified staff, to be able to even come into the NEA. And once NEA did it, then it opened the door for the states to make that determination. For decades that we didn't have them. The other piece that I think is essential is that people get confused because they might more frequently in the press hear about the president of the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, which is Randy Weingarten, is their president. They have about 750,000 members. They are in the urban areas, New York, Chicago, UTLA United Teachers of Los Angeles is both an NEA and an AFT affiliate. But that's not common. In Arkansas, we are an NEA affiliate.
National Education
yes.
Association.
And the other thing I'd like to add is that people don't realize, like, I think it's so important to know the history because it's not just about merging the two groups together in terms of work, but also like in Little Rock, we have a library branch that is named for Sue Cowan Williams, who was the African-American teacher who was a member at the time of the ATA, which was the Arkansas Teachers Association, which was the Black Educators Association. And she is the individual who sued the Little Rock School District School Board to make them pay all teachers, regardless of race, on the same pay scale. Because prior to her work, that didn't happen. So, I mean, and she ended up losing her job, but she was a trailblazer, and I'm so glad that we have the library next to Dunbar is named for her. And I think it's important that we know that. We need to think about Granger Ledbetter and the work he did with Nettie Nichols and some other transportation workers in the late 80s in Little Rock to found the transportation unit, because transportation is crucial. Schools cannot operate without an efficient, effective transportation employees. And they were frankly being treated as if they were throwaway employees. These are professional people and they needed to be treated that way. And Granger led that strike and with Nettie, and they were able to form that unit and become into the Little Rock Education Association.
Okay. the classroom teachers, Little Rock Classroom Teachers Association?
It was until I have a plaque in my office. I was president, and it took about 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. We had a vote. It was the third time in our history. And we changed the name in Little Rock to the Little Rock Education Association because I'm kind of a blunt girl from Mount St. Mary who doesn't know sometimes when not to say something. And I can't belong to something that doesn't have me in their name. And I couldn't understand why if you were a secretary or I'm a library media specialist, I am a classroom teacher, but I'm not. Transportation workers aren't, and they felt disenfranchised. So okay. We had to have a massive vote, and we changed the name, and we've moved forward.
These organizations are structured like other unions, where there's a fee you pay to be a part of that.
Yeah, you have the choice to become a member.
Okay.
And you pay a membership dues.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
To the local, state, and national.
Mm-hmm. And some locals don't have dues.
Yeah. Yeah. Some locals only, $5 a year. It depends on the size and what they determine. They self-determine what they need to do, what their priorities are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the other thing I want to mention is the name Education Association is our work to be inclusive of everybody who is serving
involved
students.
In education. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And Tracy Ann and I weren't here, and Paul, you and I were probably toddling around about that time. But when the merger came, which we're going to celebrate in 2018 mm-hmm. at our Human and Civil Rights event, we will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the merger of the Arkansas Education Association, which was the white organization, and the Arkansas Teachers Association, which was at the time what all the black educators belonged to. And that's a historic moment in our history because it was where once they were able to unify, they could better organize mm-hmm. and that they could insert that social justice piece that was so important based on the work of, like I said, Sue Cowan Williams and some other amazing educators.
Let's talk a little bit more broadly then about the role of unions in the United States and especially in the South. I know quite well that the Industrial Revolution and what happened in the, in the Midwest and other places were around, they were not right to work laws. But anyway, just talk a little bit about the union movement in the United States.
Well, historically, there was a lot of, as we know, in the beginning, people, I'll use the most famous, the Triangle Shirt Factory fire. There was many attempts to organize the women who were working 7 days a week in low lighting, weren't in terribly just packed in conditions in New York to sew clothes, and that were sold. And they barely made, they were paid per piece and they would end up taking it home and the working conditions were an abomination. And for years, the people in the garment industry tried to organize. And what has always been used as a reason against it was it's a form of social, of communism or that type of organization. And it's always been used as a, like in bigger cities, the Irish to attack a certain group of people based on race or whatever. And then after the Triangle Shirt Factory fire and all those women died because the emergency fire, door was locked and, the International Garment Workers Association was founded, which my grandfather was a member of. Yes. He and my great aunt worked there for years. So, and the working conditions improved. They weren't working 7 days, 7 days a week, and they could go to a 5-day work week. But also you look at the other conditions that were going on at the time, children We had, child labor. We had unsanitary conditions. They didn't care because as fast as immigrants were coming in, and we all know this, they thought that they could put them in those jobs. They could easily, they were disposable.
Right.
There wasn't any value. So when the union, when the American Federation of Labor and the CIO, when they started coming, when they started really forming, it was based to give people a true opportunity at the American dream, because they hadn't had it. Carnegie and other industrialists, they were doing everything they could not to pay a living wage. Now, they were going to make as much money as they could for the less than 1%, and they weren't concerned about the conditions that their workers were in. So you see people coming together to organize on safety issues, on work issues as related to children. Who in the world could believe that it was right for children, 5 years old, to go to work in a factory?
Well, it's clear that there had to be a union movement in order to secure safe conditions for people to work on, no matter where they were, whether it was a garment factory or a farm, whether it was a bank. I mean, because even mm-hmm. bank workers have organized, and the first ones came out of Minnesota, to a chicken factory. I mean, it's really important for safety reasons, for fair pay, and for the well-being of workers, so that they're not working hours that make them, invaluable to their own families, that they aren't working till they're unhealthy themselves. Right. Right. So all of the benefits that we all sought to take for granted now in terms of work environment were hard-fought, won issues that unions put on the table and worked for and people organized around because their loved ones were, gravely affected by it.
Right, right. Well, I know in Arkansas, we were the first in 1944 to put a constitutional amendment on our
ballot,
and it passed. What does right to work law mean?
Well, right to work law, in my mind, means abuse of humans and
like
workers.
To work for little, for nothing.
Right to work for nothing. And we know how that came about, unfortunately. And I think the culture of our state is well elevated above the law. I think Arkansas clearly has a belief system about unions. They have a belief system about the value of human beings and the value of humans in the workplace. And it's unfortunate that this is still in place, the right to work law,
and
which came about then.
And there are 28 other states that mm-hmm. have this.
Yeah, and it didn't even start with an Arkansan. It started with Texas. It started with someone in Texas from the Dallas Morning News who himself had been advocating against unions and, came across some folks in Arkansas that worked to put that right to work law in place. And so to me, it's not even germane to our state.
Right.
It's not organic to our state. And I think it's time for us to work to change that.
And it's had a big impact on the state.
It has. And it still remains a big impact.
So one of the things that's really disconcerting as we've been discussing mm-hmm. the history of how the right to work law came about in 1944, Arkansas
41.
Was
mm-hmm.
We were 41. We were one of three states mm-hmm. that actually this one particular man, Ware, that he worked to bring it around, and he worked in Arkansas, and then they had other people that worked to get it on the ballot in Florida and in California. Mm-hmm. So when the vote took place, California voted it down, and Arkansas and Florida became the first two right-to-work states. But he did it strictly. He was a paid lobbyist, and he did it at the behest of industry leaders and the Arkansas Farm Bureau. And it was based on their commitment to continuing racism. Mm-hmm. They didn't want a black man or woman to be telling and I'm using the nice language because he didn't. They didn't want them telling a white woman or man what to do. And they believe that if they allowed unions to come into our state, that is exactly what would happen. In fact, there's a part about this Arkansas Farm Bureau was adamant for it because they thought tenant farmers would start telling the landowners how to run their farms. So they took it as an affront. But it was all based on racism against Jewish people and against
African Americans.
It's mm-hmm. very clear.
The goal was to maintain Jim Crow in labor relations and in work environments. It was the political agenda of Vance Muse of the Christian American Association. And his grandson describes him as, quote, a white supremacist, an anti-Semite, and a communist beta, a man who beat on labor unions, not on behalf of working people, as he said, but because he was paid to do so, which is what Kathy's referring to as the lobbyist.
He put out heinous pamphlets. They scared. And, of course, at the time, you didn't have voting protection, so African Americans weren't able to vote, to go to the polls when this was on the ballot in 41. They were scared away from the polls. And when you're race baiting, we've seen this too much in the last couple of years. Sadly, it's reared. It's not that it ever went away. It's that people kind of got complacent from my perspective, and they thought, oh, things are better because President Obama was our president. But it wasn't. All it did was, in the race relations, it gave people who, for some reason or another, think that by the grace of whatever the color of their skin is, they're superior to someone else, which is just ignorant.
Well, what has the AEA, the Arkansas Education Association, and other labor organizations accomplished despite this right-to-work law in the state?
Oh, we've accomplished so much on behalf of educators, and I think we've set the trend in the state for how to advocate on behalf of workers. That includes, you know, navigating and successfully negotiating for fair salaries for educators, whether it be a teacher or a bus driver, and setting a standard and a bar for salaries for that work, uh-huh. For ensuring that teachers meet a certain criteria in order to be in front of students. So the certification criteria is something that we help create and establish and now exists as a standard of how you decide that somebody's eligible to be in the classroom in front of students. We were avid supporters of creating that framework so that parents can feel that the person who is in front of their child is prepared and is credible in their subject matter and child development, so that they're able to be in front of children and teach them.
All right, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're talking about the labor organizing in Arkansas, and in particular around the education folks that are connected with the Arkansas Education Association. I would like for you, if you've been a teacher, if you've been a member of a union, if you've had experience with this that you'd like to share, please give us a call here at 501-433-0088, and we'll be glad to put you on the air. We're going to take a real brief break right here, and we'll be right back with more discussion. Thank you for listening, and we'll be right back.
Sometimes I can't.
Good evening. Welcome back to Speak Up Arkansas. We are talking about the labor organizing and in a right to work state. In our studio is Kathy Kohler, the president of the Arkansas Education Association, and Tracy Ann Nelson, executive director of the Arkansas Education Association. Again, this is a live broadcast. You can call in with the questions or comments at 501-433-0088, or you can email a question or comment to speakupar@gmail.com. Kathy, hang on a second. We've got a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I was calling to ask Kathy Kohler, why do you think that people speak so negatively about labor unions?
I think that's an excellent question.
Thank you for calling. Yeah.
Thank you.
I think a lot of it is the culture in, first off, in our state and then across the nation, because it has, the message has been turned around to make it appear that instead of unions having done away, reminding people that we don't have child labor anymore and that we advocate for standards that protect workers, mm-hmm. and all of the things that we've done, like in education, it was the AEA who pushed for the legislation during the Depression in Arkansas to found the Arkansas Teacher Retirement System because Social Security was not going to be enough. All of those things that we've done over the years that has been turned into, we're greedy, we're asking for more, we don't care about kids. And that narrative, when people hear it time and again, they just begin to buy into it. And it's a cultural piece that we have to get a handle on the language that is used and turn it into a positive and talk about we have to be the ones that message the positive things that people that are members are doing every day in the steel workers union, in the pipe fitters union, in whatever organization it is, what labor has done to protect the general public and the safety and welfare of the citizenry of our country.
And they also, I'm sure, it's bad for business model because they are asking for more, and if they do that, the prices are going to go up too. I imagine that's part of it.
So let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, I want to, give us an example of the impact that these right-to-work laws might have in this state and maybe have had in this state.
So in 1941, we passed the constitutional amendment making us one of the first two right-to-work states. 1945, Sam Walton and his wife and his brother take over and start running a Ben Franklin store in Newport, Arkansas. Sam, at the time, by 1962, founding his first Walmart. By all accounts, by his own account, he was a very cheap individual. Like, he made all of his employees pay 10 cents for a cup of coffee. No matter who you were, if you were the president or whatever, if you went on a business trip, you had to room with another employee and you had to fly. Anyway,
that's what we do in the nonprofit world.
That's right. So he understood that to keep the cost down and make it profit, he had to keep the payroll down. So he said, no matter how you slice it in retail business, payroll is one of the most important parts of overhead and one of the most crucial things you have to fight for profit margin. He wanted to hire as few employees as possible and pay them as little as possible to keep the profit margin up. And he was most afraid of, and he said this, of unions, and that they would take away the profit margin. Now, the difference between Mr. Sam, as many older Arkansans called him, is that he also came to the realization at one point that in order to get the best out of his employees, he had to make them a part of Walmart. And so that's when he came up with the idea that they could buy shares off of their paychecks. And so he did for a while. And then in the 80s, of course, they had the Buy American, everything, you know, they, as long as something wasn't 5%, if it was less than 5%, if it was made in America, 5% over what was made somewhere else in the world, they put it in Walmarts. And so that was a big crusade under Ronald Reagan, buy American, let's go. And that helped Walmart expand. Walmart, in turn, you know, continued to, did lead the way. Certain things, they were the first corporation to really use computers to control their inventory, which made, which helped them expand quickly. But what we all know is they went into small towns, they put mom and pops out of businesses, out of business. And so now, then when Walmart's pulling out of small towns again, they're pulling out, and that's the only place people have to work. But the part that, that has continued to stay in our culture that should frighten all of us is that Randy Zook said about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago,
he's, who is the president
of the Chamber, Arkansas Chamber of Commerce, who thought I'd be quoting Randy. they 1.35 million Arkansans, more than one in three, makes $21,000 or less.
A year.
That impacts us because those, many of those employees have to be, have to have public benefits, mm-hmm. to be able to just be able to feed their children or to have housing or for medical care for their children. Okay, so we're picking up that cost. The average Walmart associate salary is $18,319 a year. So they fall under that $21,000 thing that, that Randy was citing. And you take it a step further. If Walmart would increase their prices one penny on every dollar, just one penny, they would be able to afford a $2 an hour raise for every employee. But instead, they spend their money fighting any attempt to unionize everywhere. They actually have like a SWAT team that if they know that they, that, that anyone's even like, they're monitoring their employees, and they will send them from Bentonville to somewhere else in the country and out of the country. They actually put that one in Quebec out of business when they voted to unionize. And then of course they claim, no, we didn't do that, but they did. They put the meats, when the meat slicers voted to unionize, all of a sudden they decided that all the meat in their stores was going to be prepackaged. When the tire and auto people that they used to have, you would go and get your oil changed for a very inexpensive price. Then when they started to unionize, they moved people that they knew were going to vote in favor of it from one store to another and brought people who were against it. This has all been proven in the history of this store. There is a cost to our state's welfare to shop at a Walmart, a Sam's, or to bank at Arvest, because it continues this culture that we should be satisfied to make $18,319 a year. And no matter how much we work to educate students, they're still going to need people at Walmart to fill these positions, because we're back to that mentality that employees are disposable.
Right. All right. Again, you can give us a call, 501-433-0088. Tracy Ann, mm-hmm. How do you think this is impacting the workforce? Do you have some?
You mean lack of unionization impacting
yeah, well,
the workforce?
Yeah, being a
right-to-work state. I think it's harmful to the workforce in many ways. Number one, the less unionized the workforce is, the lower the wages. The lower the wages, the more people have to access public resources. So, you know, food stamps and public health access. And then we all pay for it more because they're not earning, you know, fair wages. But the other thing, too, is that it really discourages economic growth. Because people want to participate in the economy as they earn more money. But when the wages are suppressed and as a result they can opt to go to other states or other cities, then we lose those workers to the better paying opportunities, and it suppresses the economic viability of Arkansas.
Okay. the the average, or are there any studies that show that there is that connection in Arkansas, that the right to work law has had an impact like that? I mean, do you know of anything related to that?
I don't know of a study, but I know.
Well, I actually, there is.
Oh, okay.
The 17 states, which are current, that are currently agency fee, which may or may not end on June 28, 2018. Agency fee is that everyone who goes to work in a public school, in or in the public, anyway, they are automatically members of the union.
That's in other states.
In other states, not our state.
So but California, Pennsylvania.
But the point about this is they consistently have the highest, their students are consistently the highest performing in the country. Massachusetts, Connecticut, right. New York. There is a direct correlation between agency fee, which we do not have in this state, and student success, because they insist that their work, they're able to insist that their working conditions are, and the students' learning conditions are optimum, because they are banded together and they are able to effectively advocate for what they know they need. And to, and when you're not a right to, when you're like a right to work state, a lot of people are reticent to jump into this because for fear that they're going to be targeted or singled out by the administration or whoever as being a rabble rouser.
Yeah, they feel like they'd be abused in some way.
Uh-huh. The other thing that's really kind of scary, and we were talking about this, is the article that, that Tracy Ann has, that we both have, that just came out. In the last 5 years, the number of students in Arkansas, I mean, the young people in Arkansas who has a bachelor's degree has risen more than 2% from the previous 5 years. But here's the part that's interesting. Same time period, the average family's income, the average income in our state dropped, while the rest of the country was growing at over 3% in that range in the salaries. Ours dropped. We have a culture where people do not feel comfortable saying, I'm worth this much. I know what I'm doing, and I should be compensated for it. And to take it a step further, I just got back in a very weird thing. I've been to Portland and to San Francisco, San Jose, some other places recently where, you know, we have this initiative, which we love, 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 that the Arkansas students, you know, every child should have coding. But where is the investment in our state to build a culture that attracts those bachelor degree students who graduate with a degree? There's not enough work for them here, so they're going because of the living conditions, the type of culture, the where other young people are, and it's not here. It's on the West or East Coast, and we are having we're suffering a brain drain.
Yeah. So to back up what Kathy was saying with regard to the number of people who are acquiring bachelor's degree in the last 5 years. Compared to the previous five, but the median income in the state dropping, the poverty rates in the state for among people ages 18 to 64 has also grown. So if you look at the matrix of those three things, poverty rate increase, salaries that are decreased, yet people are graduating with higher education, there's not a place for them. And that is something we have to address in the economic landscape of the state, which should include a discussion about unions, their value, how they help to negotiate not just salaries, but the working conditions. And it's not there's a thought process where we think for people to earn more money is at the sacrifice of the owners and shareholders. But those two can live in concert. Shareholders can still benefit, but workers should be able to eat and feed their families also.
And the other thing is that employees regardless of whatever it is people do. Employees who feel valued, who are treated as valued members of the organization for which they're working, it's been proven time and again they're going to be more productive.
Right.
So in the long run, investing in healthcare, retirement, a defined benefit retirement, in wages, in building a culture that will move our state from people who are successful educationally saying their opportunity lies outside our boundaries to saying, I'm going to stay here because everything I need or want to have a good life is here already.
You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can give us a call, 501-433-0088. In the studio with me today is Kathy Kohler, who's president of the Arkansas Education Association, and Tracy Ann Nelson, the executive director of the organization. What is the biggest impediment to organizing in Arkansas, do you think?
Why'd you laugh, Kathy?
Because I had to bite my tongue. Tracy Ann and I are both big believers that, and as are everyone that we work with, that we have to find a way to work together because we're all invested in the next generation of children. And that blame, assigning blame to one group or another, is not going to ultimately get us to where we need to be. So one of the things that we really need to do is from my perspective, is to really have a hard cultural conversation with everyone at the table, discussing what it is that we want for our children and how do we do that. I think we all want them to have the opportunity to be successful. And if we start with an agreement of what it is we want, it's easier to work together. I will tell you this, about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, I worked on the last Little Rock School District plan for what they wanted, vision plan for the district. And there was led by Jim. And anyway, it was great. But everyone about fell out of the chair one day when Jay Cheshire from the chamber made a motion and I seconded it. Because working together and being around each other, Jay and I agreed from the outset that we agreed on what we want. We just don't agree on how to get there. So if we'd all stop blaming each other and we could set our biases to the side. I mean, my bias is I never walk in a Walmart. There's places I'll never eat because of their labor practices. So, I mean, it's important. That's a personal decision I make. That's separate from Kathy, who is sitting at a table talking with people in government, policymakers, and the chamber, and other interested people who want to see our state be successful and want to offer opportunity. And I have to leave my bias to the side when I walk in, the same that other people do. I just think it's too easy, Paul, for people to get caught up in where they're at, and they hold it so tight that they can't be open to listening to other people. You want to know an interesting fact that's just bizarre, but it's just essential too. Teacher stress level has been proven over and over to be one of the, if not the highest of any occupation. And I read an article, I've been telling everybody since I read it. One of the contributing factors to stress is that teachers are dehydrated. And they're dehydrated because they don't get to go to the restroom. You have to stand in the hallway when classes are changing. You can't stop class and run to the restroom. So most teachers solve the problem. They don't drink water all day long, and that contributes to their stress level.
All right. Well, that is an interesting. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, I am so glad that she just addressed the stress level. I've been listening to the show for the better part of the hour here. I am a former Little Rock School District certified teacher. I taught in the district for over 20 years. And 3 years ago, I had to quit because of the stress levels were so high. Year after year, my doctor kept putting me on medical leave because of my blood pressure was off the scale. I was having anxiety issues and all kinds of stuff. And I can say this, all of my colleagues, including people in their 30s, suffer from chronic high blood pressure.
Did it change for you after you got out of the system?
Well, I am still recovering.
Yeah.
I have symptoms that I've been to every specialist under the sun now, and nobody can find anything. I'm suffering from what we don't know what to call it other than vertigo.
Okay.
It's an imbalance. There's a lot of fatigue involved.
Right. Well,
The doctors ordered me to spend as much time outdoors as possible, walk every day, hydrate.
Right. And when you've been in that stressful situation for so many years, it has long-term impacts.
Right. And, I'm so glad to hear somebody finally addressing these very, very real issues, because they were always brushed under the rug.
Right.
Anytime I tried to bring something up like that, I was basically,
a whiner,
slapped on the wrist and told to go to my room.
Right. Yep.
Go to your room and be quiet.
Right.
Just do your job.
Well, thank you for your years of being a teacher, and thanks for calling us and sharing that with us.
Well, thank you. And yes, the world needs to know that teachers are suffering from chronic stress-related illnesses.
All right. Yeah. I can imagine. All right. Thank you very much, sir, for sharing that with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Paul, I know we're talking about educators, but I want to put it in a larger context of the state and the essentialness of helping the workforce feel okay with being engaged in discussions around unions, because that seems to have a problem. There's like this secret oppression about unions that is unfortunate. And we need to feel comfortable engaging people around the values of unions, the history of what we've done, not just in Arkansas, but across the country, and why we are relevant now more than ever because of the economic status of the state of Arkansas. Without us at the table helping to change the working conditions and the pay scale for the workforce, we will continue to idle at the bottom of the country in terms of places where people want to come and work.
Right. I know there's a Supreme Court case called
Janus
versus the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
AFSCME.
If the Supreme Court sides with that, what would that mean for labor organizations, and what exactly is that?
Okay, so it's most likely going to, the best projection is it's going to be released on June 28th, 2018. And what will happen is the states that are currently agency fee, not Arkansas, because we're not.
Explain what
you have to start from the beginning. What is the case about? The case is,
go ahead.
You want me to help?
Yeah.
So this case is about someone who's decided they do not want to participate or be quote-unquote forced to be a member of the union. And essentially in states like California, Pennsylvania, New Jersey,
that you mentioned,
they
earlier.
Get to be a part of the union because they benefit from all of the work the union does to negotiate contracts. Their argument is they should not be a part of the union and therefore pay union dues, and those people who are in that space want to collect back their union dues from AFSCME, which is the union.
Okay.
Once the decision comes down, and by every legal scholar's best guess, it is probably going to strike down that. It's going to be
the agency fee.
Agency fee, most
states.
Likely.
Mm-hmm.
In the states. In the other states, will be struck down. The impact for us is actually more of an internal thing, because we're right to work. So we've never had any kind of thing where people had to be a part. So for us, that doesn't change. We've always had to go out and recruit members and talk to people. It does have impacts on us internally in terms of national staffing and some other things. And we're working on that right now, because our goal is to make sure that the members don't feel it.
All right. Well, we could go on and talk more about this. I think this has been a very lively conversation, and I want to thank Kathy Kohler and Tracy Ann Nelson from the Arkansas Education Association for sharing their thoughts. And thank you, callers and listeners. Next week is going to be, I believe it's going to be careers in the health care system. Mm-hmm. And what are the opportunities, particularly for minority and people of color. So join us on Speak Up Arkansas, and thank you again for listening. Have a good week and a good Christmas and a good life.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye. We are 100,000 watts of community radio here in Central Arkansas. This is KABF 88.3 Little Rock, the voice of the people.
Welcome to The Bioneers, revolution from the heart of nature.
We make solar panels at room temperature from water that are non-toxic. Children are taking powdered sugar and blackberries in their school, making a coating, shining light, and generating electricity. By stepping back and saying, gee whiz, maybe the molecules already know what they're doing.
It's all alive. It's all connected. It's